Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome again to another program of Open Government Radio. I'm Steve Buckley, your host, and we will be, and today is June 8th, 2010, and we will be talking today about the Secret Participation Act of 1969, which is something I made up. It's an actual law that's on the books, and so it's not really been secret, but for many people it may well have been secret to them because they don't know about it, or they know about it but they misunderstand it. So, and certainly that applies to open government because open government is about transparency, participation, and collaboration. And and I've been involved, as many of you know, in various circles with the federal efforts under President Obama to take that from lofty ideals and so forth to some type of implementation, at least as far as federal agencies go. And with the publication last April, 2 months ago, when all the federal agencies came out with their implementation plans about how to be more participatory, transparent, collaborative, and so forth and so on, it's finally getting to the point where the rubber hits the road and the details about how we actually do this. And a lot of people don't know that there are laws, not just directives from OMB, which don't carry as much weight as a federal law. And so it's good to point out that there are laws on the books already and have been around for years and years that require basically these things: transparency, participation, and collaboration, at least to a certain degree. And so anyway, I thought it would be interesting to it seemed like the time was right to bring out the fact that these laws are on the books. So anyway, here's what we have in store for you today. If you're following along and you're on your computer, which I hope you are, but you don't have to be, but if you go to ustransparency.com for June 7th, which is yesterday when I posted it, that's the description of today's program. And you can certainly just listen, but at the same time, it's much better to follow along because there are various links that we want to point you to as we go along, and that would be, hopefully, if you're listening live or even later on, you'll be listening and following along. We'll try to go slow so that if you have an older computer like mine, that we won't lose you as we click along from here and there, because there are a number of things to cover in an hour, and we're not going to try to cover everything about this subject today. So in any event, if you've gone ahead there to ustransparency.com, you'll see that the Secret Public Participation Act of 1969 is really the National Environmental Policy Act of 1969. And when I first joined the federal government in 1977, fresh out of college, that was my first job, was in what's called a NEPA office at the Federal Maritime Commission, an obscure little agency in Washington, D.C. And anyway, that was what I was told to read, was the how to write environmental impact statements, basically, and so forth. So, and I've been involved since that time. I worked at four other agencies, and there was always some experience of mine. I was always working related, indirectly or directly, with the National Environmental Policy Act, because federal agencies are required to follow the law just like everybody else. And so that's what they have to do as far as writing environmental impact statements and so forth, as far as what they think will happen when they are proposing to take certain actions. But before I go on any further, I want to introduce my guest for today, who is Judith Lee. And as you can see there, she's owner of Environmental Planning Strategies. And there's a link there that you can follow that provides some more information to her consulting company and a background on her and so forth. But as it says there, she has 25 years of experience and education in natural resource management, environmental planning, and practical and effective implementation of NEPA and public involvement. So, and I had spoken with her, I think, probably about 10 years or so ago, because part of her expertise comes from actually training, I guess, federal employees and others in how to comply with NEPA. So maybe that would be a good point for Judith to come on and tell us how she fell into this area, starting perhaps with the beginning of her professional career. Are you there, Judith?
Yes, I am. Hello, Steve, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
I not only train
federal people, but I also assist federal employees out there to actually do their own environmental planning, their own documents in compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act. So I've got experience with just about every federal agency out there, and I'm a former federal employee myself.
Okay. So is that how you got drawn into it like I did? I got drawn in.
It started with work at the state of New York, and then I was fortunate enough to get a job with the U.S. Forest Service out west, and that's where I really cut my teeth on the National Environmental Policy Act. And then from there, I've worked for private, and now I have my own business working with the fine federal employees out there who are doing the best they can to prepare environmental documents and do good environmental planning and informed decision making.
And for those, like I said, I'm trying to introduce this law that, like I said, is already on the books and already involves a lot of public engagement or slash involvement in public in government decision making, at least on the federal level. How do you explain it to people who, for someone who's just discovered this and saying, oh, I didn't know about this, how do you put it in terms that what NEPA does, particularly with respect to public involvement, I guess?
The National Environmental Policy Act went into effect in 1970. And if we remember, that was the first Earth Day that year. The Clean Water Act was passed. The Clean Air Act was passed. And it was under President Nixon. The interest was we had many environmental problems, and the Congress wanted to have an environmental policy. And with that policy, they wanted to ensure that federal agencies incorporated environmental concerns in their planning, because they've been doing planning and making decisions. That's part of their job as federal agencies. But what they weren't doing was considering the environmental ramifications of the decisions they were making. So this law requires federal agencies to be fully informed on not only the costs, not only the politics, not only the design and technical aspects, but also the environmental aspects of any decision that they're preparing to make. And a critical part of that information that they have to have for informed decision making is, what do people who care about a particular project or a particular place, what do they feel about, what do they want the agency to consider as part of their decision making? So they very wisely built in public involvement in 1970, which was a long time ago, so it was primarily a forerunner of the whole transparency process. They built it into the regulations implementing the National Environmental Policy Act and required that the agency not only do good planning, but but that they write the planning, the information associated with that planning and decision-making down and make that available for people to look at and make comments on, come to meetings and provide comments directly. So it was basically, other than the Administrative Procedures Act in 1946, it was the first federal law that required and integrated public involvement, agency involvement into federal decision making.
So something like, for instance, if a government agency, you know, say Federal Highway Administration or something like that, responsible for highway bridges, and there's a bridge near your house that needs to be rehabbed, and they're thinking that, well, do we put in a new bridge, or, you know, do we move the bridge? Maybe there's about, you know, since the time the old bridge was built, that the traffic patterns have shifted, and so that's the time when, now, at least the way it's supposed to work, is when under NEPA, the federal agency can't just go ahead and build a bridge where it thinks it's best. They actually would, you know, good planning would involve asking the people who drive around in the area and use the bridge and get their input. Is that right? Is that fair?
Exactly, Steve. The good planning starts with the federal agency or an applicant deciding there's a problem that needs to be fixed. And let's say with your example that the bridge is old, it's reached its 30-year lifespan, and because of increases in population, it's now congested. So the Federal Highway Administration identifies that there's a couple of problems going on with this particular bridge. So they've identified the problem, they've done the traffic studies, they've done the safety studies, they've done the technical studies, and they've said, we have a problem. And they've decided that they're prepared to make a decision about fixing that problem. So because there would be environmental concerns associated with replacing that bridge or building a new bridge or both, the National Environmental Policy Act requirements would come into play. And so it's very important for federal highways not only to work with, let's say, the Coast Guard and the National Marine Fisheries Service for potential impacts to fish, but the Endangered Species Act and with the Fish and Wildlife Service in case there's some endangered species and the National Historic Preservation Act, but also to go out there and say, folks, you use this bridge. You would see this bridge. This bridge would be a part of your life. What do you want us to study? What are you worried about? What suggestions do you have that we consider for ways to fix the problem of congestion and safety as it relates to this bridge? And all that information would be put into a written document that would then go out for more public review. They would actually get to see the analysis and how their comments were used before, and then they would have a chance to comment before all that information would go to the Federal Highways decision maker. So you can see it's a very important planning process that requires not only good planning, it requires interagency organization and collaboration and coordination. It requires public involvement and participation. The fact that it has to be written down and made public is a very important transparency issue and process, and all that information is part of informed federal decision making.
So what you were describing there was, and people are familiar with the term environmental impact statement. That's, I'm assuming that's, anybody who's listening to the discussion has heard that term and is at least familiar with that term. So what you were describing as far as the public being involved in the development or the writing of the environmental impact statement, that's what you were talking about before?
Yes, an environmental impact statement is required by the regulations implementing NEPA for projects that would have the potential for significant impacts, which either can be severe impacts, high impacts, and or impacts to a really important resource. A high degree of context is what they use. And because the impacts potentially would be significant, they require quite a robust process that includes scoping, which is not only agency scoping internally and with other agencies, but also scoping interested and affected groups, organizations, and citizens on what their worries are, what their concerns are. So that would be done before the draft environmental impact statement was ever written, so that they can get their comments in early. And then also, after the draft environmental impact statement, or EIS, is written, then it goes out for a minimum of 45 days comment to all agencies and anybody who's interested in or affected by a particular decision that the federal agency is preparing to make. Some agencies even require a 60-day comment period, such as Department of Interior. And then they would take the lead agency would take all that information that comes in from agencies, from the public, from organizations and whatever, and put together a final environmental impact statement, which then has another 30 days, and it again, it's public, before the agency makes its decision with, we want to replace this bridge in this way with this mitigation, with these ways to soften environmental impacts, that then that decision is also made public with all the commitments that the agency makes to environmental protection in what's called the Record of Decision, or ROD. So that's the most formal, robust approach that has full public and agency comment, involvement, and transparency.
Okay. So, but the key word there is significant. It's not for everything of course, federal projects come in various sizes, just like bridges and so forth. So if there was, for instance, using the example of the highway bridge, there are certainly come in different sizes. You could have like an interstate highway bridge, which would probably most often, if it was being replaced or built for the first time or whatever, that would probably be in the same league as qualifying as a significant impact. But there may be other, and so that would require an environmental impact statement. However, there might be, local bridges, or there may be, I know there's a bridge near my house that's actually being, it's just a two-lane bridge, but federal money is involved. And so that probably may not be the subject of a full-blown, so to speak, environmental impact statement. There's a smaller version, right?
Yes, Steve. And one thing I want to clarify that you just brought up is the National Environmental Policy Act only applies to decisions that have some level of federal involvement and authority. It does not apply to decisions regarding made by state agencies or even private individuals. There has to be some federal authority and involvement. And one of the things, one of the powerful things that the regulations implementing NEPA did was it said, just like you said, Steve, not everything involves significant environmental impacts, but there's still some level of environmental concerns that need some level of planning by the federal agency. So they created, when they put together the regs, many different ways to avoid unnecessary paperwork, unnecessary delay, unnecessary costs for federal decision-making. So for those actions that have some level of environmental impact but not significant environmental impact, the regulations created a planning and decision-making process called the environmental assessment. It does not require the robust process of an environmental impact statement, but it does require some level of environmental planning and, up to the discretion of the agency, some level of public involvement. But that is discretionary, unlike the required public involvement for an environmental impact statement. Most agencies, in the 40 years since the National Environmental Policy Act was passed, have started to include more and more public involvement, even in their environmental assessments, or EAs, because they realize how important that public participation is. But again, it's on a case-by-case basis, and every agency has its own approach to environmental assessments within the framework set up by the regulations themselves. And even with that, The regulations identified another way to avoid unnecessary paperwork and unnecessary delay for those types of actions where the agency says they're administrative. They're doing a study where they're not, they're counting things, let's say. They're not actually digging in the dirt. Or they're administrative type actions in terms of putting budgets together, or they're law enforcement activities. For, let's continue with the federal highway approach, for bike paths, let's say, that wouldn't be on new alignment, where there's no potential for environmental impact. So the regulations created what's called a categorical exclusion. And every federal agency comes up with a list of the types of actions that they typically do that would not have environmental impacts. But even with that, the regulations require the federal agency to identify screening criteria, let's say, that they call extraordinary circumstance, where an action that typically would not have environmental impacts could possibly have it, such as, let's take the bike path example. You can take a bike path and you can put it through an area that potentially has endangered plants. So that brings in the Endangered Species Act. That would be an extraordinary circumstance where typically bike paths are fine, but in this case, they have to do more environmental planning on it. So all the way through, the folks who put the regulations together for NEPA tried to make them as practical as possible, and recognizing an agency's discretion in making its own decisions, but ensuring that environmental considerations are incorporated appropriately through the decision-making process and the associated documentation of the planning and decision-making, and appropriate public involvement and appropriate public notification of agency decisions. Now, for categorical exclusions, some agencies have very little, if any, public involvement. It's certainly not required by the regulations, nor is documentation required by the regulations. But some agencies, such as the Forest Service, actually provide notification of even the categorical exclusions, so people can choose to get involved if they want to. The Department of Energy publishes every categorical exclusion on their website that they do across the country. So you can see that they've built in kind of a three-tiered approach to not to the planning, but to the public involvement aspects of planning, with the most robust being the environmental impact statement, the next level with discretionary public involvement being the environmental assessment, and of course, incorporation of all the other environmental laws that apply, with the least public involvement being the categorical exclusion. And agencies still have to comply with other environmental laws, even with their categorical exclusion, and they can choose to include the public in some, if not all of them.
Okay. Well, and there is a link here that I want to point to that captures those three different aspects, or avenues, rather. But before we go there, because it's a flowchart diagram with arrows and so forth, but I just want to make sure that people understand who are listening that there's three basic avenues then. When a particular action or a proposed action that the agency is thinking about doing, whether it's a bridge or a permit or whatever it is, and it lands on the desk of someone in that agency's NEPA office, then it's up to that NEPA office to figure out where is it a major project that's going to require an environmental impact statement? Is it a minor thing like mowing the lawn around the thing, or changing the paper in the copy machine, or some type of administrative thing like you mentioned before about shuffling papers, or doing a study, or going about the normal business of just office work, for instance, that wouldn't amount to any type of significant impact statement, or is it something that it's not sure of, that's in between the minor and the major, that there's, and it's like, well, it's not clear what that will be. That would be the environmental assessment, the in-between thing. So there are these three, you know, the baby bear, the daddy bear, and the mommy bear gets all, just like in real life, the mommy bear gets the leftovers or whatever, but that there are these three, three ways that can go. And so that's why I said, and so having said that, I'm going to direct our listeners to look at the blog that they're following along with us, and we'll scroll down to, let's see here, scroll down to number 10, which is link number 10 under handy links. I know we skipped over some here, but this is a good point to get people to conceptualize that there are these three sizes, as it were. And number 10 is a flowchart diagram of the NEPA process. And we got this from Lucinda Lo Swartz. com. She used to work for the President's Council on Environmental Quality. So, and if you click there, and I'll wait until you've gotten there. Tell me when you've pulled it up.
It comes right up. Yes. It
comes right up. Yep. And you can see that it said the NEPA process, and the way that it follows here, it doesn't say pick one of these three. It basically says let's start out and see if it qualifies for a category that's already been predetermined, you know, like mowing the grass or administrative procedures or perhaps, you know, building a bike path. But
clarify for your listeners, every agency is required to come up with its own list of actions that can be categorically excluded, because what the Army does, U.S. Army, is different from what the Fish and Wildlife Service does. So every agency has its own list and its own NEPA procedures. So it starts out with a law, then the regulations implement the law, then the regulations require that every agency have its own agency procedures for implementing NEPA within its own decision-making process and the types of actions that it typically does. So if you want to know the categorical exclusions for a particular agency, there are websites that Steve has on his blog, including www.nepa.gov, that has every agency's NEPA procedures, and their list will be in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll get to that. I just wanted to make sure they understood before we dumped them into the explained that this is going on all over the place. But the idea that there is that this NEPA process is something that would happen, that every federal agency would follow this same basic decision making about how what slot, for instance, to put it in. So yes, the categorical exclusions, and these categorical exclusions are ones that, like you said, the agency comes up with them, but at the same time, they are offered to the public. For comment, to see if the public, these would be regulations. So if they're going to come up with regulations, then the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946, which one could think of as the also largely unknown Public Participation Act of 1946, would require them to put these out and say, you know, well, we're proposing that bike paths as a category is one that never has, or as a group, does not have any significant impact, along with mowing the lawn and changing the copier paper or whatever like that. But they would have to put that out for public comment, and so they can't just come up with this unilaterally and in secret. Is that right? I mean, is that fair to say?
That's exactly right, Steve. And Steve mentioned the Council on Environmental Quality. That is a council that works for the president, advisory council that was required by the National Environmental Policy Act. And the Council on Environmental Quality, or CEQ, works with agencies and works with the president in ensuring that compliance with NEPA is appropriate and practical and legally sufficient. And one of their jobs is to review agencies' NEPA procedures to ensure that they are compliant with NEPA and its implementing regulations. And that includes reviewing an agency's list of actions that typically require environmental impact statements and that are typically categorically excluded from preparation of an EA or an EIS. So after the CEQ reviews it, it then, as Steve most correctly said, it goes out for public comment and review with publication at a minimum in the federal newspaper, which is called the Federal Register.
Mm-hmm. So the and of course, and I'm sorry, I was distracted for a second, but did you mention that the CEQ has oversight and would pretty much before it was put out for public comment, the President's Council on Environmental Quality would look over these proposed regulations,
yes,
to make sure they met, you know, that they were good enough for prime time, or at least good enough to put out for comment, and
exactly,
so forth. So I'm guessing that the way the approval process works, that they would, you know, with public comments came in and said, well, you know, we don't know if bike paths should be included or not, or this or that, or maybe in certain situations or something like that, maybe it's not appropriate for a categorical exclusion or something like that, that CEQ would have another look at it before it was all tied up with a bow and finalized and so forth.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And federal agencies do listen to public comments on things like this. For example, the Forest Service proposed timber sales of a certain size be categorically excluded. And not surprisingly, they got the number of comments in the tens of thousands on that one. And so they modified the proposed categorical exclusion to actually be smaller than what they originally proposed based on public comments.
Mm-hmm.
So public involvement is very important in the development of regulations and the implementation of NEPA to federal agencies.
Even when your comment is not one of 10,000?
Yes, even when your comment is not one of 10,000.
I would like to think that environmental, if I made a comment, it wouldn't matter unless 10,000 people, other people said it too, but you'd like to think, you know. That,
oh, no, as part of the NEPA procedures for, let's say, an environmental impact statement, when comments come in on a draft EIS, they are required to not only address every comment appropriately, including by modifying the appropriate sections of the EIS, but also to make every public comment that comes in available to not only the public, but to the president and to the CEQ. And by that, they have to actually publish every letter and every comment that comes in and make it public.
Okay. Now,
so individual comments are as important as 10,000 comments.
Okay. I just want to say, I'm going to take a station break here for a second. Just want to remind people that they're listening to Open Government Radio, and you can follow along with me. I'm your host, Stephen Buckley, and my guest is Judith Lee. We're talking about the National Environmental Policy Act, also known, at least to me, as the Secret Public Participation Act of 1969, and today is June 8th, 2010. And I just want to make sure, I was getting a little technical, you were breaking up, and I'm not sure if it's the Internet Blog Talk Radio or what the technical thing is, but I just wanted to let you know, Judith, that at least I heard you breaking up a little bit, and so I'm not sure if you're moving around or if there's anything.
No, I heard you breaking up too. It was technical difficulties, and I think it's cleared up now.
Okay. Well, just in case we get disconnected, just, you know, you have the call-in number. And for those people who are, I know there's been somebody who's been call in on one of our on the caller lines. Before we get to them, I'm just going to let them know to keep hanging on for a second. There's one more thing I wanted to be able to cover, and then we'll turn it over to people if they want to call in. The call-in number is 917-388-4210, and that Number again, 917-388-4210. And I would like people to know that I did invite some people from CEQ to come on the show today. I know they're very busy, and that kind of relates to the fact that, and what we were just talking about before we got together on the show here, I was telling you, Judith, that I was very surprised because as a NEPA nerd, as I like to describe myself and other people describe themselves, and maybe I don't know if you do, but terms like categorical exclusion are not things one hears in at cocktail parties or friendly chit chat. We don't, except among NEPA nerds, perhaps. But it's not a common term. But here I was opening up the mail the other day, and I happened to be flipping through the Rolling Stone issue, the latest issue of Rolling Stone magazine. And I'm flipping through there, and they had an editorial about the BP oil spill, and you know how this needs to be dealt with, and so forth and so on. And I'm looking down there, and they're saying S, and this thing should be, you know, it says, let's see, in April 2009, the administration granted BP a categorical exclusion from rigorous environmental review of its drilling in the Gulf. And I'm looking at that, and I'm going, I don't believe it. I'm reading Rolling Stone magazine, and they're talking about categorical exclusions. That's just like, you know. So it seemed to me that perhaps the time is ripe to start introducing this larger audience, now that they've started talking about categorical exclusions, that we should put this out and explain more to them about what it is, what a categorical exclusion is, when is it proper to use one, when is it not proper, and as a matter of fact, I wanted to point out that link number 13 here at on the blog at U.S. Transparency, it shows that the Council on Environmental Quality is actually doing a 30-day review of the Minerals Management Service NEPA procedures to see. Because, well, like I said, it was originally categorical exclusions were supposed to be for things that were like administrative procedures, you know, mowing the lawn around the office building, you know, things that were pretty obvious were not in need of an environmental impact statement every time you did them, especially when an impact statement can run to like hundreds and hundreds of pages, so you shouldn't have to do that for, like I said, going out and mowing the lawn, things like that. However, now it appears that they were given a categorical exclusion to a permit for a drilling platform, and as we can pretty much see from 2020 hindsight, maybe that was stretching it as far as a category that never has environmental impact statements. So if people follow that link, they can see that if they can, you know, if they want to provide some input along that line. So that's why I could see how CEQ would be a little busy, perhaps, and not wanting to come on the show right now. But this is going to be around for a while, so I certainly invite them to, once the 30 days is up, we can talk about what went right and what went wrong or whatever when they come up with their 30-day review, which is supposed to be over. Comments are not due by June 17th. The report's going to be due. They're going to issue the report on June 17th. So anybody who has any comments about whether or not the MMS did the right thing or wrong thing in giving a categorical exclusion to the BP Deepwater Horizon drilling platform, follow those links, but get your comments in as soon as possible.
And one of the things that I'd like to build on what Steve just said, because it lays out what we were just describing and how everything we're talking about is very alive and dynamic and very active right now. In 2007, the Minerals Management Service, which is the agency that oversees oil and gas exploration, including on the Outer Continental Shelf, which is what the OCS stands for in the blog title, they did call a major EIS for outer continental shelf oil and gas exploration in the Atlantic, off of the state of Alaska, and in the Gulf of Mexico. And then they did an additional study using the first one was an environmental impact statement. Then they did an additional study that reviewed what was done in the environmental impact statement for just the Gulf of Mexico and for different areas within the Gulf of Mexico. And that was also in 2007. And then for the Deepwater Horizon well, the MMS, the Minerals Management Service, did a categorical exclusion based on the studies that were done in the EIS and in the EA. And both the EIS and the EA did interagency coordination for Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and many other laws that found that the impacts, the potential for the impacts, were not that high based on what was known. And the Council on Environmental Quality also put out some guidance in February on categorical exclusions, which was the Deepwater Horizon explosion was in April of 2010. So in February in 2010, the CEQ put out guidance on federal development of categorical exclusions, CEQ's role in categorical exclusions and their approval, public involvement, and all of that, as well as periodic review of agency categorical exclusions. So 2 months later, the Deepwater Horizon exploded, and now CEQ, along with the Department of Interior, have been tasked with doing a review on just what happened with the whole NEPA analysis and procedures for that related to the Deepwater Horizon problem. So CEQ is asking for public comment under the Administrative Procedures Act with a notice in the Federal Register that was dated May. Let me tell you. It was dated May.
It was the Friday before the holiday weekend, I remember.
Yes, it was May 28th.
Oh, yeah.
May 28th, Volume 75, Number 103. You can Google it. Just put in Federal Register, Friday, May 28th, 2010, and you can get
okay.
The Federal Register.
Well, that's okay. It's already here on the...
oh, the Federal Register is? Okay, good job.
But when I put the link number 13 there, if people follow that link, it'll take them to the CEQ's website, and... then you can see there, if are you following along there? You can see what I'm looking
yes.
at, Judith? Okay.
Yes.
Then, and that's what I was pointing out, that there is a highlighted line at the bottom of that notice that says the deadline for public comment is June 17th, and that's not correct. I mean, they
yes,
maybe
yeah,
take
and
comments
the Federal Register
up until the last minute, but...
yeah. They're in a hurry. They're trying to get this taken care of.
Yeah, that's when the report's going. So don't wait until June 17th or even the 16th to get your insightful thing there. But I'm hoping that one thing I would have liked to have known if they had come on the show would be to ask, you know, how did this fit in with the, you know, is this the last word or are they going to put this out for comment? I mean, the idea that... I mean, here we were talking about how you engage people about you put stuff out as a draft and say, hey, this is what we think is going to happen, and then you get their comments back, and then you finalize it, as opposed to what's going on here. I understand they're probably under the gun to come up with something, but hopefully it won't be presented as, you know, well, we asked for comments, and this is the last word.
No, I think that the whole intent of this review, it was requested by the president, and of course the CEQ works for the president, mm-hmm. and the information that that CEQ and the Department of Interior come up with as part of this review will go to the president for his use on what needs to happen next and are any changes necessary. So it'll mm-hmm. be used by the president for his decision-making.
Right. Although it does say here on this webpage, public participation in this review will benefit the process, blah, blah, blah. But not if there's only a week and a half, I think I'll probably put in some comments myself that point out the fact that public participation, but on a scale from 1 to 10, maybe a 2, something like that.
Well,
so,
and
anyway.
One of the things, they do list in the Federal Register, Steve, the questions that they would like people to address. So since they didn't already have a proposed rule, they're actually trying to use public participation to come up with some kind of guidance or rule or whatever the president determines is appropriate. So they have 6 questions in the Federal Register notice that they'd like people to respond to. What are the issues that they want people that they want the president to consider? They want to look at the sequence of processing permits for outer continental shelf analysis and decision making. What are the past industry and agency experiences with the use of categorical exclusions? Has the use of the categorical exclusions been an effective tool for reducing paperwork without compromising the NEPA analysis for oil and gas activities? To what degree has public engagement been a part of Minerals Management Service NEPA practice, particularly as it deals with categorical exclusions? So they're actually asking specifically, has it been good enough? And then the last question is, what resources are available in federal, tribal, state, and local government agencies with a stake in the outer continental shelf exploration to participate in NEPA reviews? So their primary interest is ensuring that enough public participation is involved in the permitting process from beginning to end, including down to a particular oil rig in a particular area in the outer continental shelf. So that's their primary interest in asking for public participation. They want to know, is it working? And if it's not working, what needs to be done to fix it?
Oh, yeah, and it's great that they're doing that. It's just that the time frame is so condensed that a 30-day review probably is
short,
not.
And I'm sure that's being driven by the president.
Oh, yeah. But at the same time, as long as it's recognized that it's not adequate it's not an adequate thing that it's like, well, if you want a 30-day review, then the public comment's only going to be a drive-by opportunity for public comment, and that it can still continue even after June 17th. It's not like, okay, we'll never revisit that again because we had this short window of public comment on it. So that's why I'm hoping that they'll create some other way for people to collaborate on this. I mean, I don't know. I can't collaborate. For instance, I'm a retired federal employee with experience in NEPA, but I'm not collaborating with anybody if I'm just sending my comments directly to one person, and then they decide.
And
what
see,
to
there's
do.
Several. There's different levels of processes for public involvement, Steve. And under the Administrative Procedures Act, it's simply comments, and then they respond to comments. It can go everything from inform to consulting, which is basically the level that they're doing here, is consulting people. Involving, where they actually work with people to identify, and then collaborating, which is actually asking for advice and innovation, all the way to empowering, where they get to actually help with the decisions themselves. This one is basically at the consulting level, just asking for information, recognizing that people are involved and do care. And, So
it's just that
they
will
can't
never
take
be a
it
draft
all the way to
comment.
The collaboration.
Yeah, there's, that there's...
You know, it's not clear from the Federal Register whether they will put out the draft, whatever the president decides.
And that's why I wanted them
to
come on, so that because if you knew what the process was, then that would get, my comments to them would depend on what's going to happen after that, because if I knew that something...
Exactly.
If I know they're going to put out a draft, then I would not... try to, it would affect, I wouldn't give them both barrels because they'd say, okay, fine, well, here's my general concerns. I'm going to wait and see what you come up with. It's just like with a scoping meeting in NEPA. It's not like, okay, we're going to have a scoping meeting and then we'll come out with the final environmental impact statement. It's like, wait a minute. It's like, just because you asked me what I thought way back in the very beginning about the impacts that a bridge would have, And then you're coming out with the, you know, is there going to be a draft? Is there going to be, you know, are you just going to skip to the final report or what?
And I may be speaking out of school, but I believe that they will follow the process that's generally followed under the Administrative Procedures Act, just like CEQ put out guidance on categorical exclusions, and they put it out, they provided the guidance and then put it out for public comment through the process in the Federal Register. So I believe that anything that comes from this particular effort will also be put out as some kind of either presidential memorandum or guidance or even potential changes to regulations, which is what they're talking about now as it relates to the 30-day review of permits that come in. Minerals Management Service, by law, only has 30 days to review any particular permit. And they're trying to, they're considering extending that to 90 days. But Congress would have to act on that. So I suspect there will be additional opportunity for public comment after this, after the report comes out. But CEQ and Department of Interior and the President will make that.
I would hope so, too. Hopefully they wouldn't come out and say, this is the way it is, and that's the end of that. And I would point out to people that there's a couple other links here about levels of collaboration. These are typically links number 11 and 12 are CEQ documentation documents. One is 11 is Citizen's Guide to NEPA, which I would encourage people who are new to it and want to find out more to click on that. And read up on that. Number 12 is collaboration in NEPA, and even though it's talking about particular NEPA projects, these are still things that it mentions. I happen to notice in there that they mentioned the spectrum of collaboration or engagement, comparing it to the one that the International Association for Public Participation uses, and that's been something we've talked about on this show. I think it was back in March we talked with a couple of people from IEP2 about that. And so there are levels of, like you were just saying, Judith, you know, there's the what do you think about this, and then they go off and do it, and then there's, you know, a whole, it's not collaboration or not, there are levels of consultation and engagement. And and so certainly we'd all like to have the optimum level, and we'd all that's the real trick. It's a matter of how do you do it, how do you engage enough people without, you know, going on and on and on and on and not making any decisions. And
Steve,
the
would you like to take the caller? Did you say you had someone who had a question?
Well, I think they got tired of us. Sometimes people just listen. I'm going to look back again. They went away. I mean, I checked about 10 minutes ago and they had hung up. Sometimes people just listen. So, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. So people were, like yourself, were wondering about the caller. One other thing among the links here that I had, I want, before we leave, I would say, like I said, look at the CEQ, documents that are already set up there. And then there's a couple ones there about the BP oil spill. One was an editorial in the Washington Post, and about the fact that the MMS, Mineral Management Service, had given them a waiver under a categorical exclusion. And then there was, I couldn't get a link to the Rolling Stone magazine, but you just have to take my word for it. I went to their website, looked all over, and I guess they had all the other neat articles in there, but not the editorial. So maybe I'll go back and look again. And there are, for those people like yourself, Judith, who may be wanting to learn more about the Open Government Initiative and how that really does complement public engagement efforts that have been going on for years. And that's what I'm hoping, that the NEPA people understand, the open government people, who are the relative newcomers, so to speak, and the open government people understand that there are resources that already exist, and they might just go find out who it is in their federal, if they work in a federal agency, and they're trying to be more engaging with the public and so forth, and they've been tasked to do that, to go talk to the people in their office that handles the National Environmental Policy Act compliance, or NEPA. So,
and I'd also like to point out on your blog that you got a comment from one of your readers that provides some very good information about the Administrative Procedure Act. If anyone is interested, I go on.
Right, right. And if people scroll down, if they click on, there's a green box at the bottom of the posting. I just want to make sure there's for comments. And then they will see that Tiago Peixoto, hope I pronounced that right, took the time to explain that the Administrative Procedures Act was really a precursor to NEPA, and there are other acts as well. But the and I would I will try to post. I will add your paper too, Judith, because I did highlight it there that that this is all about. If people look at ustransparency.com and they see under your introduction to you that there's I highlighted and quoted that excerpt about the paper that you wrote back in 1997, which talks about the fact that this is all about collaboration and decision-making, you know, collaboration with the public and decision-making process with other agencies and so forth. And I the phrase here is that it involves political risk, and that tends to make NEPA discomforting at best to many managers and practitioners.
Other thing I'd like to say about environmental planning, NEPA, predicting impacts, what we're dealing with is an art based on science. So, and the science is very often uncertain as well. So the people who are doing the predicting of impact very seldom have excellent information and sometimes have very little information at all. And so that's why public involvement and agency involvement is so important, to make sure that all the information is available to the decision maker, including contradictory findings, so that they know that there's uncertainty and risk involved. And I'd like to encourage everyone out there that's interested in a decision that a particular decision the federal agency is making, that they become informed, that they go to the agency website, that they make phone calls, and that they choose to get involved in effective ways. And NEPA is one of those ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. And NEPA.gov, you can see right across the top there, there's a link for CEQ regulations and guidance. And that's really the one for the bureaucrats, that is, that shows that this has the effect of law. These, you know, this is not guidelines. These are federal regulations with the effect of law. So that's the thing to keep in mind, for especially for open govers who are trying to get people moving. So we're almost up to the point at the end of the show. I would, if anybody wants to leave comments, I guess we've got a couple minutes here, but...
And people are free to contact me through my webpage that Steve's put on your blog. If you have any particular questions about NEPA or Administrative Procedures Act or any of that, I'd be glad to answer your questions.
Okay, well, I appreciate you coming on. And as I indicated to you before we started the show, this is really just an introduction to NEPA. 90 seconds, okay. So we are definitely going to be revisiting this subject, particularly when the Council on Environmental Quality comes out with their review. And I've given them an open invitation, so it's up to them whenever they want to come on and talk about categorical exclusions and all this good NEPA nerdy stuff that you and I have been talking about today. But the idea is that there's this law that has been that needs to come out of the needs to be considered for not just coming up with environmental information, but also for people to be invited to the table of decision making, whether it's whether it's big projects, medium projects, or even the little projects that are being categorically excluded, and you might want to, like I said, take issue with whether something should be on the bottom rung. And so anyway, this is Steve Buckley with Open Government Radio. Our guest today has been Judith Lee. You can find the links to her consulting firm at the blog at ustransparency.com for so join us next week when we'll be talking more about open government. Thank you very much, Judith.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.